Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello and welcome. This is Carl Nordgren. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill, WCHL. The best radio station in the state. I'm looking out at the lobby and I can see all the trophies that proves that this radio station for 5 years in a row has been identified by their peers as the best radio station in the state. This is the show that believes that creativity is so important that I'm not going to define it for you. Instead, I'm going to give you lots of different perspectives, lots of different behaviors, lots of different thoughts so that you can build your own multifaceted, dynamic understanding of what it means to be creative. One of the ways I provide you with lots of different perspectives is by bringing in awesome guests. And we've got another great guest today. We've got Paul O'Connor with us in the studio today, along with Flicka. Paul O'Connor is a former political columnist for the Winston-Salem Journal. That column was syndicated to 70 papers. He's a longtime professor of journalism down the road at UNC. And he's here today because of his new book, The Missing Child. Paul, thank you so much for coming. Maybe a good way for you to get started is to share with the audience that incredible subtitle that you've got for your book.
Well, thank you, Carl. Thank you for having me on the show. The subtitle is The Life She Lived and The Life She Missed. That's my mother.
That's your mother that you're referring to.
Yes.
And so what brought you to writing this book? What was the motivation?
The motivation is that a reporter came across a story he couldn't resist.
And you're the reporter.
And I'm the reporter. The day we buried my mother, we found her private papers, which she wanted destroyed.
Oh.
And my sister and I and my cousin said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to read them. And what we found were the first clues to answering the story of her life. She had been put in an orphanage at the age of 1 month.
Okay.
We found the first clues to uncovering the story of the family that gave her away. And so this book that I've written, The Missing Child is My Mother, The Life She Lived is Her Life, The Life She Missed is the Lives of the Family That Gave Her Away. And the third storyline is this reporter who's wrapped up in this personal story and who knows very little about genealogy, learning enough genealogy, combining it with what I knew about public records and a lot of free time, especially after I retired from UNC, to run around and find that story and interview my cousins and other friends who knew my mother and just to talk to librarians and find out stuff about my mother's life. And about life in general.
Yes.
And this all happened in Connecticut, some of it in Camden, New Jersey, some of it in Bethlehem, New Jersey.
And when did this start? What year was it when your mother was 1 month old?
My mother was put in the St. Agnes home on September 30th, 1917.
Okay.
St. Agnes was a very progressive for its day, a very progressive orphanage run by the Catholic Church. It was based on the same principles that Boys Town in Nebraska was based on.
Okay.
That is charity and support and respect for the children. So she was fortunate in that regard.
Yes. And she was in the orphanage for how long?
1 year.
Okay.
I think it was almost to a day.
Okay.
And the story we had always been told was that she was adopted. Well, she wasn't adopted.
No.
She was given to foster parents. And the foster parents were in their 40s, maybe I think my grandfather was actually a little older than that. And the mother, the foster mother, was an Irish woman from Tipperary. And he was from Delaware. John Fraser was from Delaware. She had a very supportive first 8 years with them, and then the mother died in one of the influenza epidemics of the 1920s. And the result was that my mother was transferred to the dead woman's niece and her husband. And to say that that was a dysfunctional family was really an understatement.
So she was never formally adopted by that first family. She was always in a foster relationship.
Nor in the second.
Nor in the second.
Yes.
Okay.
And I don't think it was all that uncommon in those days, because as one lawyer from the Connecticut Genealogical Society suggested to me, if she was adopted, the family would get no financial support. So long as she was a foster child, there was probably a small monthly stipend from either the state or from the Catholic Church.
Okay.
So, but that is just a guess.
Okay.
And then I follow my mother's life through numerous setbacks. She had a very difficult life. And I also find the family that gave her away. And my search is, why did they give her away? And there are all types of twists and turns in that. And none of my assumptions when I started all of this turned out to be true.
None of your assumptions as to why they gave her up.
Right. Okay. We went out for pizza, friends of mine, on a Friday night, and this good friend of mine, his wife, just turned to me and she said, "Oh, I know why." And she was right.
Wow.
But she was the only one at the table of 12 that guessed that, and we didn't realize she was right for 5 or 6 years.
And why was it?
I'm not going to tell you.
I got to read the book.
You got to read the book.
Good for you. I love it.
You got to get to chapter 26, I think it is.
It's wonderful. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
So you say the second family, is that where she then spent the rest of her life, is with that second family?
With that second family. And when I speak of my cousins, my aunts, my uncles, it is those are all – all those people stem from the two little girls that my mother was in charge of.
Okay.
My mother was 8 or 9 years old when she went to that second family. There was a 3-year-old daughter and a newborn. And my mother was basically Cinderella. And
she had to care for them as and sacrificing herself and caring for them.
And for the rest of their lives – the one way you could really get either one of my aunts upset with you was to suggest that my mother was anything but their sister. They had no recollection of life without my mother. And my mother was the linchpin that held the family together.
They knew she was not a biological sister, but they totally embraced the role that she played and they declared her sister.
Yes, I don't think they ever made any distinction
okay.
with biological
right.
sister or not.
Right. Wow. And so they're where now? They're in Delaware?
No, now they're still in this all happens. She's adopted from the orphanage in Hartford, Connecticut
okay.
by a family living in New Haven.
Okay.
And my mother then lived the rest of her life in New Haven or its suburb of East Haven, Connecticut.
Right. We've got a good start here going, Paul, and we're up against a break now. Folks, when we come back, we're going to hear more about the book, and we're also going to hear about this really awesome program about families telling their stories that Paul has been rolling out here locally. He's going to tell us about that, so come on back after the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. We're in the studio with Paul O'Connor. He's been telling us about his first book, The Missing Child. But let me underscore one more time that he was a professor at UNC's Journalism School. And I should have called out in the first segment what I wanted to say, which is this is the best program in the country. The Journalism School at UNC is just such a wonderful program. And I learned that there's folks here in the studio or in the radio station that
they were
students.
My students.
Yeah, oh, that's
Brighton
so
McConnell,
wonderful.
Victor Lewis.
I love it. I love it. I love it.
I think there have been a few others over the years.
I love it. I love it. I love it.
That's where they got their real training.
Well, talk about your training as a researcher. To tell the story, you must have been doing a lot of serious research to make this happen.
Well, you don't spend 42 years working for newspapers without learning how to look through public records.
Okay.
And so that was one thing I had experience with. What I didn't have any experience with is going online through Ancestry.com or 23andMe.com. And so I learned that. And what I found was that when you You mixed what you found in the private papers and what you found in public records, like in the books of birth certificates and wedding licenses and all of that, with what Ancestry and 23andMe can do in terms of, you know, digital research. You get a wealth of information.
I'll bet.
And so I was doing that. And then you take a DNA test, which I know some people are leery of, and I understand they're being wary of it.
Yes.
I figured that after a lifetime of writing out columns about myself and my opinion, what else does anybody want to know about me? So I took two of the tests, and it led to meeting a number of cousins. And one of whom, for example, said, well, have you ever read our uncle's book about genealogy?
Oh.
And I said, what uncle? It was an uncle I didn't even know I had. He was a great uncle. He was a cousin. He was the husband of my grandfather's sister.
Okay.
And he wrote a book on genealogy, and a good bit of it was about the O'Connor family. Now, that did not work itself into this book.
Right.
But these are the kinds of breaks you get when you're studying and when you work genealogy, and things just pop up on you. Yeah.
Well, I find in my entrepreneurial career that when I commit myself to something, mm-hmm. it surprises me how often the world seems to sort of be prepared to help me.
Yeah.
It sounds like you had some of those experiences.
My shout out every day is to librarians. I don't know where they find these people, but they are just so helpful. And we could talk an hour about some of the experiences I had with librarians.
My number one high school sweetheart, I didn't see her forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And I finally went on Facebook about 10 years ago and discovered that she had this rich, rich career as a librarian, and mm-hmm. it made all the sense in the world to me because she was such mm-hmm. a lovely person.
Well, we were just speaking with Brighton McConnell here, and one of his classmates in those last years that I taught at Carolina turned out to be a master's student at ECU in the library program. And I said, if ever there was a child that was bound to be a librarian, it was her. Anyways, I'll stop on my library pitch.
Well, one last quick comment, and that is that I was told by 1,000 people what a great school the journalism school is. I've been told what a great school your library sciences program was, too, at UNC.
Right.
I think we
actually had a couple of professors who were in both.
Okay. That would make sense.
Had dual appointments. I did not.
Okay. So you're doing research.
Yes.
And you're getting surprises, and you're doing research from lots of different sources.
Right.
Lots of different sources. What is there a surprise in your discovery that you're prepared to share with us?
It is a surprise.
That'll tease us into reading the book?
There is a surprise, and it is revealed on page 86. So, no, I'm not going to tell you what it is now. But it has something to do with Princeton, New Jersey.
Okay.
And it has something to do with finding family members I knew nothing about.
Okay.
And I will leave it there. I think there were so many surprises, but the surprise that really hit me was after I'd read the book. And as an author, you know this, that you write a book a chapter at a time, a sentence at a time, you put aside, you come back to it, blah, 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 blah. Then you're done with it and you give it to your editor and she – and it's typically a she, so I'm not being sexist here. Because women are just much more focused.
Every one of mine has been.
Yes. And our publisher is a woman. And she says, okay, now you have to read it from start to finish and have it back to me by Tuesday. And I sat down, and the surprise of my life was to read this whole book mm-hmm. and to see my mother's life mm-hmm. in its entirety.
Oh, yeah.
I'd written every one of these words.
Right.
But only then did it hit me what she went through. And when my cousins of the next generation read the book in the last couple weeks, what they wrote to me was, I always remembered Aunt Charlotte as being the strength of the family. What a strong woman she was.
Yay.
I never saw it that way either. So from my perspective, the surprise was reading it and saying, how did she ever survive all of this? And then the answer from Kathleen and Kelly was, well, because you didn't know how strong your mother was?
Right.
No.
Right.
She was the one that cooked dinner.
Right.
She was the one that told me to go to bed.
And so how long did she live?
She was 76 years old when she died.
Okay.
She died of lung cancer. She was a serious smoker.
Okay.
She loved her beer. And so whenever we have one of these reading events, I bring along Narragansett because it's an awful beer, but she loved it. And so we'll have a toast. I'll open a couple cans and everybody takes a little taste.
Oh, how wonderful for you to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah. And so, and she was a banker, but she had no education. She had no sophistication about her at all. And she was the type that would come home from work every day and light up her cigarettes and sit on the back porch and watch the world go by while she drank a couple of beers. And then she went in and watched the Merv Griffin show, for anyone who's old enough to remember that.
I learned how to juggle watching the Merv Griffin show. They had a juggler on the show, and Merv insisted that the guy break it down slowly. And I picked up three walnuts from the table, and I just started juggling because of Merv Griffin. Whenever I see a juggler, I think of Merv Griffin.
What a great influence on the next generation Merv was. And then the other thing is he created so many great TV shows.
Yeah,
the Merv Griffin show was her favorite, and Steve Allen.
So what was your mother's name?
Charlotte Frazier O'Connor.
Charlotte Frazier O'Connor.
Charlotte Ann Frazier O'Connor. Her birth name was Irina Mikolajczyk.
Okay.
And
tell us that story. You did tell me that story.
Okay, that story is.
And then we'll go to the break after.
Okay, so I'm looking at this name on these records. I have no idea how to pronounce it. And my wife and I were in Baltimore for 3 years. I was going back and forth to teach. And we end up in a Polish Catholic church. So I write down the name and I go up to this woman who's at the church bazaar. And I say, do you know how to pronounce this? And she says, Mikolajczyk.
Wow.
And so I said, wait a second. I get out my iPhone and I record her saying it.
Yes.
About a week later, I'm in Washington, D.C. And this fellow walks by with a Polish scarf. And I said, are you Polish? And he says, yes. He says, I'm the vice consul. I said, whoa, then you know how to pronounce this name. And he says, Mikolajczyk.
Okay.
So for any Polish speakers out there,
yes.
I don't know whether it's Lajczyk or Wajczyk, but I can spell it.
Okay.
With my fingers, I
can. Well, we're going to hear about Paul's new adventure when we come on back from the break, folks. Talk to you in a sec.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back, folks, and thanks for coming back. I hope you're going to have just a wonderful Sunday and a wonderful week. We're here in the studio with Paul O'Connor. He's been telling us about his new book, The Missing Child, and we've heard about his mother's extraordinary life as it's told in this book. I teased you all a little bit that Paul, besides all the wonderful stories of his family that he's got in this book, he's also developing a program that's going to help folks tell their family stories. Paul, tell us something about that program.
So in 2018, the last semester I taught at Carolina, I taught a course. It was considered an advanced reporting class where I sent the students out to find family stories. And what we did was we applied the principles of creative nonfiction to family stories.
Okay.
And that's what I want to do now, is create a 90-minute or a 60-minute masterclass in which I discuss five or six things that people can do in writing their family stories using creative nonfiction and trying to juice up the readability of the stories that they may be leaving for the next generations. When you and I spoke a couple days ago, I tried to quote an old Chinese proverb, and I messed it up. So I have it now. And the old Chinese proverb is, a stream without a source will soon run dry.
Yeah.
And what my Chinese neighbor has told me is that in China, the grandparents, the parents, and the children all live together in the same house.
Right.
So when you really think about it is that the one in the middle has access to five generations worth of family stories. Okay, the two older and the two younger plus their own.
Yeah.
We don't do that in this country. No. And what we're allowing to happen is our family stories to disappear.
Right.
I never met any of my grandparents. Never met any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. I've got to run around, and it would have been so nice if they had just sat down one day and written some thoughts.
Right.
We can take that a step further. And so what I have arranged with several retirement homes to come and talk for 60 minutes, 90 minutes, whatever they can accommodate. I'm doing this just as a hobby, not as a business. My God, I don't want any more business dealings. I'm of that age where I keep track of money. It's not very easy. Anyways, and just kind of talk to people the way you and I are talking right now about how we can write these stories and write them so our grandchildren will want to read them.
An extraordinary asset for that family to have is a even semi-comprehensive telling of the family stories.
Right. You know, the there is this funny little thing that happened that my son called me 2 weeks ago. He lives out in Oregon. And he got the book. And he says, you know, Dad, this is pretty good. He's a great writer. He is. Okay. He's a wonderful writer. He has much more of the flourish than I do.
Okay.
He can throw adjectives and nouns together. So that's what I'd like to do. And I've got two churches. I'm not going to name any names, but I've got two churches that have asked me to do this, and I've been in contact with four different retirement centers. And I'd like to do one a month. Whether, you know, that won't run me into the ground.
Well, I'm going to introduce you to one more. I've done some work with the Seymour Center.
Okay.
And I just sent a text to my contact there yesterday asking if I can introduce them to some great new talent that can bring a program in that I'm sure their members would love. So you'll have another place to go at the Seymour Center, I'm sure, here sooner than later.
Yeah. Well, is that the one that's the senior center for Orange County?
Yes.
Yes, that's where I used to vote.
Okay.
When I lived in Chapel Hill.
Yep.
Now I live in Durham, I vote.
Yeah, there's a place in Chapel Hill. They have a facility in Hillsborough.
Right.
As well.
Yeah.
Well, our family is a family that tells family stories.
Mm-hmm.
And what is just so clear to me is how young kids, the young nieces, the young nephews, the young grandchildren, will come up to you and say, tell me that story again.
Yeah.
They want to hear it again. They want to hear that family story again.
Yes. And I've got to tell you, I can't repeat some of the stories that these kids, these 19-year-olds got from their grandmothers and grandfathers. But they were hilarious.
Yeah.
They were hilarious.
Yes.
And we enjoyed it.
Well, folks, I sure have enjoyed being here with Paul. I'm sure you all have as well. Again, his book is The Missing Child. And those of you who are regular listeners know that this show will be posted on the chapelborough.com website on Wednesday. And when it is posted, you'll find links, you'll find all the contact information that Paul has got so you can learn more about his work and about the programs. And so check that out. Paul, thank you very much for being here with us.
Carl, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yay. And folks, have a wonderful week.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelborough.com.